Welcome to Pet World Insider, where we bring you inside the world of pets, pet products, pet places, pet people, and amazing pet stories.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Pet World Insider. My next guest regularly appears on different TV and media outlets, sharing her vast pet knowledge on a wide range of topics, including pet first aid, pet care, and so much more. She's a teacher, an author, and someone whose efforts really make a difference here in the pet world. Let's welcome to the show Denise Fleck from Sunny Dog, Inc. Denise, welcome to the show.
It's Bow Wow wonderful to be here.
That's great. Well, Denise, you do so many different important things in the pet world, and I'm really happy to have you on the show. I want to talk about, we've got the 4th of July coming up. We've got lots of, you know, fireworks and other celebrations going on. How do we prepare our pets, and what do we need to do ourselves to make sure they're safe during these times?
Well, that's a wonderful question because, unfortunately, more animals, dogs and cats in particular, end up at shelters this week than at any other time of year. They're scared out of the safety, you know, of their houses, their fences, by the fireworks and the sparklers. And it isn't just that one night on 4th of July, especially this year we're falling in the middle of the week. You know, sometimes they'll be doing them on the weekends or days before and prior. And people do their own little things, you know, that make noise, that scare pets. So the best thing you can do for your pet, number one, is not bring them to any fireworks display. You know, their ears are so much more sensitive and they don't understand that the flash in the sky and the boom is something just to enjoy. It's very frightening and they feel the vibrations as well. So keep them safely at home. Make sure screens are tight or better yet, that windows are shut. Put on the stereo or the TV to kind of muffle the noise a little bit. Don't leave them even in a fenced yard because a dog that wouldn't normally jump out of a fence in fear will do his darnness to make sure he can get out. If you're home with your pets, don't give them extra coddling or cuddling when they're seeming scared because you want to go about your business like nothing, like it's no big deal. If you are comforting them too much when they're seeming scared from something like that, they think that's a reward for them being scared.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's best just to make sure they're in a very safe environment. If they're the kind of animals that's going to go behind the couch or get on the furniture, make sure you unplug lamps or anything should you have to leave them home alone. You know, anything that they could get into and hurt themselves. But just make sure they're in a very safe environment and muffle the sound as much as possible. There are a lot of products on the market these days, you know, that they work well for some animals, maybe not for others, just like with us humans. But there are different kinds, even just putting like a T-shirt on your dog sometimes makes him feel more comforted. Or, you know, cuddling a cat or a small dog in a towel sometimes just makes them feel more secure. So
right.
There are little tricks like that you can look as well. But just, number one, keep them safe. And then number two, if you're using sparklers or anything in your yard, make sure, you know, the pets aren't around because that sparkle can get on their fur and burn them.
Right. Oh, gosh. Yeah, exactly. Now, and it's interesting because you talk about the thunder shirts and whatnot, and it is that balance between making something out of the ordinary but also yet, you know, providing them that security and that comfort where they're not impacted by it. Where do you come down on thunder shirts and whatnot?
You know, it's interesting in that I've never had to use one, actually, but when I was a child, I always say I was raised by a Great Dane. Of course, my parents were around, but that was, you know, that was my first love, my first dog. And I lived in Florida at the time where thunderstorms were quite frequent. And
right.
This poor 180-pound dog would go in the smallest bathroom in the house, lay down, and just shake the whole time. There was he never got desensitized. Since then, I haven't had, you know, I don't have the frequency of thunderstorms here in Los Angeles very often, but I do see, you know, my animals occasionally when we'll have one kind of following me around, and that's okay. But I personally just haven't had to use them, but I've heard some good results from people, in particular with some smaller or medium-sized dogs that I know of, that, you know, just having something comforting around them. It's not like mom or dad holding on to them. It's just something else providing comfort. So I don't think they're associating the comfort so much with the negative noise, but just that they feel better.
Right. Yeah, you know, and my family lives in Texas, and we'd experience the same thing. When the thunderstorms hit, the dogs would just run to that smallest bathroom. I don't know what it is, but they do find that that's the best place for them. Now, it's also that time of year where people are getting out. They're heading to the beach. They're heading to the hills. They're doing hiking. A lot of outdoor activities.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's talk about that. Safety first.
Well, that's it. And, I mean, it can be 4th of July, but now it's, you know, till after Labor Day and beyond that, depending on where you live. One of the things, especially like with 4th of July, you may be having picnics. So be very careful with barbecues and your pets. Trust me, you turn your back for one moment and that burger's gone, but you also have a burnt snout or burnt paws, too.
Oh.
So that's, you know, not good. And,
no.
You know, you always need to remind company. Your friends and family may not be as pet savvy as you are. And, you know, think of a nice way to say it. Be diplomatic, but make sure they pull the screen door shut, that they actually latch the gate so that you don't lose your pet. And please tell them not to feed your pet, you know, human food. If you give a little piece of white meat chicken or the end of a hot dog, you know, it's not a big deal. But things that have been fried or that have batters or the skins or salty foods, it can be more than an upset stomach. It can really result in pancreatitis for your pet. And you don't have to know what pancreatitis is. You know, the pancreas is an organ. Itis means inflamed. Bad news.
Right.
So, you know, right. I'm not saying, you know, we all indulge and have a little taste of something, but, you know, also remember your pet's stomach, especially if you have a Chihuahua as opposed to me with Akitas, they have a much tinier tummy. So,
yeah.
You know, a fingernail size of something is probably sufficient as a little treat. But stay away from those greasy foods and those skins. And that's generally, you know, what people do feed. They don't feed the most favorite juicy, meaty part that they like the best. They feed the grizzle and the fat. And in the wild, our animals can certainly eat, you know, grizzle and fat off a raw animal they kill. But once it's cooked, it becomes grease, and their bodies don't know how to metabolize them, and it's bad news. So
yeah,
that's one of the things.
It. Yeah.
Right. So that's one of the things, the outdoor food. But then you need to worry about the heat, bee stings, snake bites, to say a few. The heat, our pet's normal body temperature is about 101 degrees on average. So they do run a little bit warmer than us. But my first pet peeve is people not thinking our dogs are doing a dance when they're walking on the sidewalk and it's actually burning their paws.
Yeah.
You know, I know the pads are tougher than our feet, but I basically say if it's too hot for you to place your hand or walk on yourself, it's too hot for them.
Right.
So think about the walks during the cooler parts of the day or stick to the shade or the grass. Beach sand can get very hot.
Yes, it can. Absolutely.
So, you know, wherever
happen.
You... Sounds like you've had a few incidences of your own to relate to.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, you know, again, that whole common sense, and you hear it throughout our shows. I always say if you're not going to do it to yourself or another human being, why are you doing it to your animals? And so that's a great point there on the sand.
One of the other things I'm doing these days is I teach animal care to high schools, and we, you know, go through the whole gamut of, you know, illnesses and injuries and how the body works and all of this. And sometimes when I'm, you know, putting up a list of, you know, these are signs of illness in your pet, I can see the students' eyes just glaze over because it's like a long list of different things that, you know, vomiting, diarrhea, sneezing, runny eyes, fever, the whole bit. But I said, you know, think about it yourself. What do you feel when you're not feeling well?
Yeah.
You know, it's really the same thing. We're living, breathing creatures just like our dogs and cats. Of course, some things are different in treatments and our bodies don't take the same foods and medicines. But, I mean, if your dog doesn't normally have a runny nose or diarrhea, which he shouldn't,
right.
You know, that's a sign that something's not quite right, which gets me slightly off tangent. But my big thing about pet first aid is really getting to know your pet, doing a weekly head-to-tail checkup. Because the more that you know what is right with your pet, the more quickly you can determine when something isn't quite right. And first aid isn't about diagnosing an illness or a disease. It's about noticing when something's not right so you can jump to the task and do something quickly at home to alleviate pain and further injury. But then very often you need to have veterinary help too. So it's staying in tune with your pet.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. You know, the interesting thing on that is, you know, I've got daughters who are 3 and 6. The audience knows that. And, you know, we recently had a situation where, you know, my daughters came to me and said, you know, Daddy, Sugar's mad at us. And I said, why do you think Sugar's mad? Well, she won't, you know, won't let us rub her belly and whatnot. And that was a sign to me that something's wrong with Sugar. You know, she's not
exactly
feeling,
you know,
her normal.
Sometimes. No, you're absolutely right. Sorry to talk over you there, but I was getting so excited that you were getting to a point here, and that, you know, often people will say, well, don't equate human emotions to our animals. Well, it isn't necessarily emotion. Your daughter thought, you know, that she was mad, so she thought it was an emotion. But if you think about it, if a dog doesn't want something touched, it may not be that he's mad, but that something hurts or doesn't feel right. So, you know, look at it in that sense. She was right, spot on, as they say. But getting back to the 4th of July or summer in particular, just always make sure your pets are well hydrated and that they have shade to retreat to. Should you happen to have a dog in a backyard that's fenced in and you put out that bowl of water, watch where that bowl is at different times of the day, because as the sun moves, it may be, you know, the sun may be beating down on it. So you want to make sure it's in a cool place all day or hooked up so that it constantly refills.
Right.
The other things besides heat injuries would be bites and stings. All of our dogs like to snap at bees, and sometimes the bee wins.
I'm not laughing as it's funny, but I have to tell you real quickly, I had that with my Shepherd Lab Mix. And, I mean, I had been on a trip. I came home. My other dog, Sugar, was screaming. I never heard that sound she made when she saw me. And I knew something was wrong. I ran over, and I saw through the fence that, you know, Zoe was laying there. But I didn't look like Zoe. It looked like someone took a baseball bat to her.
Oh, goodness.
And I ran as fast as I could, you know, jumped the fence, got to her, scooped her up, and we just got to the vet immediately. And what we found was exactly what you're talking about was – my goodness, we, you know, had some bees flying around, and she decided that was going to be her game for the day. And unfortunately, she paid the price. And I'll still see her do it. You would have thought she learned her lesson, but it gave me such a scare. So you're right, they do that. And
well, they do, and I mean, we do a lot with training, you know, with our pets. But I think that's one of the things. Even though, you know, I do think of my dogs as my children. But I don't think they kind of get the negative reinforcement all the time. I mean, maybe if they touch a hot grill and immediately they're burned, they might get it. But something with a bee sting, you know, especially with the allergic reaction, they start rubbing it and on. I don't think they really equate that, oh, my God, I'm feeling terrible now because I snapped at that little creature. So that part doesn't work. But, yes, that happens. But even the ones that aren't so curious can step on a bee or sit on one. So real briefly, and this is a good rule of thumb for us humans too, if you actually see the stinger, it's not very likely in your pet because of the fur and because they've probably already pawed at it. But if you see the stinger, don't pinch it out with your fingers or tweezers. That's where a lot of us make a mistake. Flick it away with your fingernail or a popsicle stick or a credit card or anything you have, because next to the stinger, the bee leaves his little poison sac.
Oh.
And when we pinch at that stinger, we generally puncture the poison sac. That toxin goes in the hole made by the stinger, and now we have the allergic reaction. Whereas if we flick away the stinger, very often we flick away, no guarantees, but very often we flick away, you know, that poison sac too, and we're left with a tiny little hole that stops bothering us quickly. But I
do
know that.
Wow, there's an insider tip for you. I did not know that. That's great.
Yeah, but, you know, often with our four-legged friends, they're already pawing and rubbing their face. And in basic first aid, I mean, if you have a generally healthy pet that has just gotten stung by a bee, obviously there's going to be swelling. So what we generally recommend is 1 milligram of Benadryl for every pound the pet weighs, and put some ice on it. You know, put it ice pack on for a few moments, take it off, put it back on, take it off. In most cases, between the ice and the Benadryl, the swelling goes down and you have a very sleepy pet who's no longer pawing at his face.
Right.
But But I got to put that little caveat in there. If you have an animal with extreme swelling or he's having any kind of breathing, just like humans, some of them are more sensitive, you know, to the bee toxin and can go into what's called anaphylactic shock. It's a severe allergic reaction. So you don't want to mess around with that. If there's any breathing difficulty, do get them to the vet. And what I'm finding more and more now, when I first started teaching pet first aid, they weren't doing this, but now when a dog has a history of a bee allergy, they might prescribe what's called an EpiPen, which you may have heard for humans.
Yes.
But, you know, so then if you're hiking with your pet or something with a known allergy, you've got that epinephrine in the right dose. You don't want to just take a human one for a couple of reasons. One, it needs to be dosed according to your pet.
Right.
And two, the collagen in our skin is different than in dogs, so it's a different needle, you know, to apply it better. But that's, you know, a safeguard. Once you know you have an allergy, you can still enjoy the outdoors with your pet. If you get that extra protection. So, you know, a huge part of pet first aid is planning ahead, knowing what the dangers are and being ready for them and then trying to stop them in their tracks. But that leads me to even myself, you know, I know I can't put my dogs in a plastic bubble. And with all the things I try to do, last summer, one of my dogs was bitten by a rattlesnake in our own backyard.
Oh.
So, you know, that has become my big paranoia, but the good thing was I was prepared because I knew what to do and I had done the preventive measure, in that I'm certainly not an advocate of over-vaccinating animals, but in this case I knew we live in an area where it's a possibility, so I did get the rattlesnake vaccine in my dogs. And it's not a cure-all, but it buys you time and it diminishes the effects.
Wow.
So even though we still had to get to that vet ASAP for the antivenin, she only needed one vial rather than the three or four, which is typical, and she was able to come home with me the same day. And I don't think she's learned her lesson. I have an Akita named Bonsai with a very high prey drive who likes to go after everything. But, you know, we got her through that, and we're keeping up the vaccination, you know, in that particular case for her. So... But
wow.
That's, you know, one of those things, as much as when you're hiking, if you are going into areas that are known to have rattlesnakes, as much as your dogs like to free roam, if they're 50 yards ahead of you, you're not going to be able to pull them back. So it's important to, you know, think about having them on a leash in your area, if you're in any area where there are dangers lurking. And the thing with a rattlesnake bite is, no, you're not going to cut an X on your dog and try to suck it out. Forget that one. Just throw away that page of the book. I've heard of somebody doing that, and both he and the dog died.
Oh.
So what you do want to do is keep the pet as calm as possible, keep the bite below the heart, and get to the vet ASAP. You want to keep the animal calm because you don't want his blood circulating and his breathing going faster than normal, because you want to prevent that venom from getting to the heart and lungs. You want to keep the wound below the heart for the same reasons. You don't want to speed up its delivery to the heart and lungs. You want to keep it below. And obviously what you really need is the antivenin, to the antidote to solve the problem.
Right. Wow.
So I would say heat, picnic food, bites and stings, and just making sure your pets are well hydrated are really important parts of the summer. Just like the planet Earth and our human bodies, our pets are, you know, about 70% water, so they need that good fresh water all the time. But I do say fresh. Drinking out of lakes and streams can cause Giardia, which results in massive quantities of vomiting and diarrhea, which can be shared with you.
Right.
So we want to just make sure we always bring along fresh water for our pets wherever we go.
Wow. Denise, you have so much great information, and again, I can't thank you enough for being on today's show. We certainly want to have you back. There's so much more to cover. Today we're on a little bit of a short show, but I do want to make sure that everybody knows how they can get more information, and I know you have a lot of great information on your website.
Well, thank you. It's a delight to be on. And, yes, please have them go to my website. It's sunnydoginc.com, SunnyDogInc.com, and I'll see them there or in a class.
Absolutely, Denise. Couldn't agree more. Great place to visit, sunnydoginc.com. A lot of great information there. Denise, thank you again for all that you're doing to improve and positively impact the pet world. I'm looking forward to sharing more conversations with you and our audience in the future. For Pet World Insider Radio, I'm your host, Robert Semro, saying thank you for listening, and we'll be back with more soon. Take care, everyone.